Well, this is awkward. First episode, we don't have anything for this.
Welcome to the Bullet Is Love podcast. This is about a really new sport that's been around for about, for like hundreds of years, maybe?
600 plus years?
Yeah, but this is a modern rendition of it.
Yeah.
And specifically, like, this was originally meant to, this was a war game. Kind of similar to how, you know, like the armed forces dudes do the laser.
Yeah, it's kind of like laser tag for the Middle Ages, so, right?
You know, yeah, like the laser tag. I like it. I like it.
All right. This sport that we do is called Buhurt. Bohurt.
Yeah. Buhurt, if you're Eastern European.
So there's a bunch of different words for this, and it means to smash. Okay.
All right. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I got learned.
So it means to smash. Mm-hmm. This is a historical sport.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what we do is not reenactment. We said it again. It is not reenactment.
It's not the same.
Right? Yeah, true. In our sport, this is Charles.
I'm Charles.
Fight for the Warlords. I'm Charlie. I fight for the Warlords.
Yeah. Right? I'm the pretty one.
I am the pretty one. Important to know that. We've got three Charlies on our team.
Yeah.
That's quick.
Wait, you don't ask Charlie and Chuck.
Yeah. 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 We figured it out.
Yep. So, but this sport is historical. In nature, not historical in reenactment. We're not reenactors.
Exactly.
We're not pulling punches. It's a real scrap. And
yep.
What we do is we fight in armor with real weapons that are rebated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that means not sharp.
Mm-hmm.
We have some safety rules, basically five of them. We call the five no's.
The five no's. Before we do the five no's, let me do something. This is what rebated means. You see how it's not sharp? All right.
And if you're listening, he's holding up a dull axe.
But how we do it?
Not grass the other distance. In already
bored as the rails.
So rebated weapons are historical in nature. Our sport goes back to about 1300s, with what's called the Tournament of 30.
All right.
This happened in a War of the Roses. I'm not sure on the exact dates because I did no prep work for this podcast. I should.
I know about the Tournament of 30, actually. The Tournament of the 30 was an organized fight. And here's the cool thing about it. In the Tournament of the 30.
Stop tapping. Everybody with headphones right now is wanting to stab you for hitting that.
I'm sorry. The combat of 30, these guys were actually killing each other. I think there was some kind of like, I don't know if it was a dispute. Or a, like, you know, my crew can beat up your crew situation. But basically, 30 knights met up in a field with armor, and they had real weapons, and they killed each other. And the really cool thing about that, as well as our sport, is it shows you kind of, it gives you a new realistic view of what armor fighting really looks
like. It's important to note that this was a fun thing for them to do during a slow period of the War of the Roses.
Yeah.
So you had English knights and French knights that decided to come together. And
it's really fun.
Yeah. Like, and they actually killed each other, I think.
I think there were like six or nine casualties.
No, like everything on one side was dead.
Well, that's because some I think it was some French dude got pissed off. One guy's like, what sports?
In roads.
You know what I say?
Yeah, yeah. It was
what we do is split mounted combat.
Mm-hmm.
All right. In America we call this armored combat because we're not lame in using old words that you have to explain.
Fair.
But our sport is actually called Buhurt by the rest of the world.
Yeah. True.
But as Americans, we're American centric. The rest of the world doesn't really matter to us.
Yeah.
We're in America.
It's kind of true.
Actually, honestly, the rest of the United States doesn't matter to us because we're Texan.
It's been even better. It doesn't even matter.
Well,
people were about to turn me off and they're like, okay. It was a chance.
All right. So, Buhurt being historical, like it's based on historical documents, and the fighting is documented in the style that we do. Now, again, we do a modern version of this, mm-hmm. but. From the challenge of Michael Dioris in the 1400s, we have first to enter the list on foot, each armed as seems best to them, having their dagger and sword upon their body as they wish, and having a pole axe such as length as I shall give. And this shall be the number of blows for all the different weapons and arms, 10 strokes with a pole axe without intermission. When these 10 strokes have been performed, the judge shall say, ho, and it goes on to describe more of this counted blows format.
Mm-hmm.
That would be similar to our singles format.
Exactly. More like duelists. A lot of people who have seen this sport will have seen a lot of our dueling. That's where the actual sword fighting happens.
Yep. And that's from Edgar de Monstrelet, Chronicus, Book 1, Chapter 2. Translation by William McLean, copyright 2001. right.
Oh, what a time.
Yeah, we have sources, man.
2001.
That's when I graduated high school.
I feel old.
I wasn't even in high school in 2001. I was 6 years old.
Oh, Jesus. Now I just felt more gray hairs. All right. So, then we also have, like, we don't thrust in our sports. Let's talk about our safety rules. We have what we call the five no's. No feet, no knees, no nuts, no neck, and no stabbing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, it's fair game.
Yeah.
You can't arm an ass cheek. Feel free to tap it.
Yeah. True. Very true.
Right.
Something else we have referred to a lot is, like, gapping. Gapping is specifically hitting opponents where they aren't armored. And that, like, that's just a thing that happens, to be honest. Whenever you're fighting within your country, you don't gap your countrymen, because the ultimate goal of our local and regional and national tournaments is to find the best fighters for us to go to international tournaments to compete as, you know, a country.
Yeah, so we're representing Team USA in Mexico for IMCF World Championships in May.
Yeah. And the Valley was silent.
Yes.
No way nothing weird is going to happen there, right?
Let's go. So you have no thrusting and rebated weapons being documented in the feats of arms at tournaments from 1446 and 1447. This is on the medieval tournament, the book, the medieval tournament, pages 307 and 308. Right? Then you've also got on rebated swords on the declaration of the pas de armes of the Golden Tree. Similarly, Mendes' sword should be without points and rebated as such as reasonably pertains to a noble and a free tourney. The Declaration of Pas de Armes of the Golden Tree in 1468 and Ralph Moffat, the medieval tournament Silver Heldrian. And man, why do all these medieval books have such long names?
Yeah, because you can't say book about armor, book about sword. There's like,
yes,
20 books about armor.
And so you can find that on, I'm not reading the rest of that title because it's like 5 lines long, but it's on page 244 on that book, if you guys want to look this up. Mm-hmm. So it does come from store documentation. I want to thank Simon Rorick. He's one of our more decorated fighters.
And Mothazer fighter, actually. Yeah. Like,
he's actually the one that came up with all those sources. Mm-hmm. I stole it from one of his Facebook posts. So, but anyway, so the sport comes from a historical background. This is a sport that the foot mounted portion of what we would typically see at a jousting tournament.
Gotcha.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we don't deal with horses because horses are weird.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Imagine 12-hour road trip with a horse trailer.
I mean,
that ass mileage is already bad.
I did one show with Charlie Andrews and the rest of the Full Metal Jousting guy.
Sure.
And we're sitting around dinner before the show, and they're like, what are you doing? I was like, well, I'm part of the Foot Mounted Combat. And dude was like, man, I'd never do that. You guys are crazy.
Oh, no. Worst dude?
I don't want to. And this is just after he got through telling me this is his first tournament back because he broke his collarbone and his rib and had to have surgery because he got knocked off a horse. And I'm like,
I know entirely too much about. So, like, you're putting the weight of a horse, a man in armor, and a man.
It's a car crash every time you get out. It's in this area. Like, I just can't do it.
But that's it.
Listen, their armor is different from what we wear.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
They're wearing, like, 100-plus pounds of armor.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
A heavily armored dude in our sport's wearing about 65 pounds.
Yeah.
Some of the guys will be wearing more than that, but they really need to get a better kit.
I can leave the comment right now. Oh, man, my kit's 85 pounds. My kit's 100 pounds. Do better.
Do better.
No. Just do better, man.
Well, also, you're probably one of the same fighters that needs to put the axe down.
We're not.
I didn't get caught before the horse. We're finally caught before the horse.
The axe?
Nobody is safe on the
no.
Nobody is safe. We will drag everyone.
Oh, my goodness. Nobody's going to watch this because they'll all put the axe down.
So, and that's what we have fives. Not counting our singles. We'll go over singles time because that's also including our sport, but it's not really the same thing.
So, when you talk about our should we break down the leagues or should we just do the no?
Let's do. So, right now, what we have, we have singles. We covered a little bit of singles. That is one-on-one fights, counter blows. Mm-hmm. So, what have been counter blows? That means you're trying to hit the other person more than they hit you.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have
just boxing.
Then you have pro fights, which are MMA with swords and axes.
Which is just MMA.
Yep. Those are pretty easy to explain, pretty easy for folks to understand. But the part that is the best part of our sport
is the melees. And that's what the term Bugert actually comes from. Bugert is not necessarily referring to singles combat.
Yeah, it refers to it.
It's kind of lumped in with what we do as melee fighters.
Right.
Exactly. And we have fives, which is kind of our like bread and butter. That's a dogfight.
That's the like standard. Every tournament is every tournament is going to have a five.
And when we talk about fives, it's 5v5. You have 8 fighters on your roster for the tournament and 5 in the list at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do a hockey style line change.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite. Hockey style would be dope, but we're still fighting. And then
it's between rounds.
Between rounds.
And it's important to note that we fight to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
This is also historically documented in one of those sources that I just read off.
Mm-hmm.
But fighting to the ground is a victory condition from ye olden times. It's also how you killed a knight in battle, right? You remember when they're doing these tournaments, they're training for actual fighting.
Mm-hmm.
They're not fighting for real. Mm-hmm. They're training for actual fights. They're proving their prowess, right? Mm-hmm. It sounds like when we say he fell, he died, right?
He died, yep.
How do you kill a knight? You make
put him on the ground.
Put him on the ground, and then you and 6 of your friends with really long pointy sticks, sad average until he quits twitching.
Yep.
That's how you kill a knight.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
So we fight to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the team with the last person standing wins.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Nope. So you have 5v5. That's our kind of our bread and butter. All right. Then you have 10v10.
And then you have 12v12.
Which is basically the same thing as 10v10, but it's in there are two different leagues than our sport. Yeah. One runs 10, one runs 12.
Mm-hmm. All
right. And that's where it starts to get fun. 10s and 12s are my favorite event.
I hadn't fought in a battle bigger than 5v5 until actually Spain last year. And I'm just blown away. Because, like,
it is so fun.
It's almost a different sport. Like, the different number variations are almost a different sport. But you got 16s.
And 16? So, IFCF, one of our leagues, tops out of 16s. So,
they got 21s.
No, they don't. That's Bugert.
Bugert?
Well, what used to be Bugert, HMB. Sorry, they used to be HMB. Mm-hmm. That's actually now Bugert International. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Daddy and Daddy had a fight, and they just split up, so they're redoing things.
Yeah.
That happens a lot in our sport for some reason.
Lots of daddies have to fight. We should just change the sport to daddy fighting.
No.
Daddy fights.
It is looking for a different sport in finally.
All right. So, So IFCF is 5, 10s, and 16s. They top out of the 16s, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And for me, once you get above 16s, you're doing something different. You're much closer to reenactment.
Yeah.
Right? So 10s to 16s in that range, it's kind of like a football match.
Okay, yeah.
Like American football, not whatever y'all do in Europe.
Yeah, that's not football.
Not in America.
Soccer. That's soccer. There's a difference. And we just watched the rest of our viewers watch that. Oh, God.
Chest and
nobody's sick. Nobody.
Yes, all right.
So with Bugert International, formerly HMB, you now get to 21s, right? And then you get
30s.
And these are what we call math battles at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So 21v21, 30v30. And when you really get to the 30v30, the game changes from a lot of grappling.
To a remain out of the line by strike.
Big pole arms striking. It looks more like a medieval reenactment of a reenactment of a medieval battle.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then they occasionally they'll do 150v150.
Yeah, we've had one 150v150 that I sadly missed. But to be honest, at the time I was fighting, I would have just died because my kit was not good for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a 150 versus 150 person battle.
That Battle of Nations in 2018?
Was it 2018?
I think it was 2018. I don't think 2019 Battle Nations happened.
You're right.
Because it got routed.
Yeah.
So 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the largest that I know of, at least.
It was an
international competition, I think, in Eastern Europe and in Russia, where our sport started.
Yes.
To do some larger stuff as well. Unclear on that. Don't feel like looking it up.
Yeah.
Correct us in the comments.
Another thing, too, is like this sport was revived by like Eastern Europe. And
yeah,
like specifically Russian.
They have state-sponsored teams in some of those countries.
Imagine.
If America had a state-sponsored team, we'd not be on it. You know that, right?
Oh,
there's no way we're on that team.
If America has a state-sponsored team, I'm going to be a great commentator.
gonna be doing
some elementary work.
Our sport is full of a bunch of what I call, like to call dad bod heroes. So, anyway, once you get to mass battles, the sport changes again to a mass battle.
Mm-hmm.
It is more reenactment-like in the fact that it looked more like a reenactment that you've seen on YouTube or TV or wherever, right?
And if you go look at some of the old videos, actually, you'll see our sport being done outside of the lists. And
in castles.
Yeah,
stuff like
castles.
That. There's a video that I'm sure you've seen where these guys drop a log off a cabin.
In a chill, I
just... And I'm literating, dude. So, maybe we typically gonna fight with logs.
No,
we probably fight with swords, maces,
axe,
hand axe,
mm-hmm.
long axe, and pole on
poles. Yeah,
right. And so, what you use in the sport depends on kind of your position.
Mm-hmm.
So, like in fives, we have what every team has different names for them. I like to call them rail, wing,
center. I just call them a one, a two,
one, two, or three. And what we're talking about is when we fight in a list, the list is a square-ish, rectangle-ish, mm-hmm. maybe an octagon shape, depending on where you fight,
mm-hmm.
Of wood. It's a wooden wall
mm-hmm.
that we fight in. And so your rail or your one will be against the list on one side.
Yep.
All right. Your wing is his wingman. Mm-hmm. He's in his pocket, mm-hmm. right? And then your center is kind of like a defensive back.
Right.
Strong safety.
So
I like to think of them as
strong safety, middle linebacker.
And on the other side, you have another wing and another rail guy,
mm-hmm.
right?
So, and these positions, we mostly stop referring to these positions once we get past fives, actually. Because, like,
you still have
rails, you still have centers.
In tens, you still have this stuff. Though you'll have, like when we did War in the North,
yeah.
I ran rail,
mm-hmm.
right? And my wing was also a rail guy.
Yes.
So you just doubled up on rail guys.
Exactly.
And then you were sitting third slot.
No, yeah, I was running the kill squad threes with.
So it was you and Mikey in three and four, right?
No, it was Mikey. And then it was.
So,
actually, yeah, it was Mikey. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so Charles and Mikey ran three and four,
mm-hmm.
Which ends up being kind of like
a wing slot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, the slot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And I like the slot. Right. I like the slot.
All right. And then you get to where you have what Charles called the kill squad, where you've got your really good centers
mm-hmm.
In the middle for 10.
Your mobile guys. A lot of times these dudes are going to be using an axe because they want to get free and they want to be able to
comply.
Yeah. Pain compliance. So another thing about this sport, too, is like, yeah, there's grappling and stuff, but axes. And we don't have one here, of course.
No axes at all.
Your buddy's
broken.
In all of
yeah,
them.
He doesn't allow axes in the shop because I tend to accidentally hit him with them, and he doesn't enjoy that.
But I'm not wearing armor, Charles.
Hey, that's your fault.
You can wear armor anytime you want to.
Anyways,
Your axeman's job, it's worth noting that your axeman's job is not to hit his teammates, Charles.
It's to hit the other guys. Stuff happens. I'm just saying.
You haven't hit me in this sport more than anyone else.
I've hit Charles in this sport more than I've hit any opponent ever. Actually, for my birthday, I broke his elbow.
Doc. Yeah. Dick.
I hit his elbow. That's it.
No armor, no nothing, just gap right in the elbow. All right.
So, how are you good at this sport, by the way?
That's kind of sad, actually.
It's, you know, hey, it,
I mean, I guess
it's in its infancy still for 600 years.
It's like the oldest continuous team sport.
It's in its infancy.
When we, our armor is, you know, we're talking about like axes and armor stuff. The axeman's job is to basically break people through their armor.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Honor works most of the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And the axe guy's not looking for, now I know a lot of you guys are axe guys or are going to be screaming at me right now, but you're wrong. Listen, the axe guy's job is not to get the takedown.
Yeah, true.
Okay?
That's true.
That was old meta that doesn't work today. The axe guy's job is to make the other guy flinch, to move,
mm-hmm.
to not want to be hit anymore. So the person that's in the grapple can advance their position in a grapple.
Yeah, the axe guy's objective is to force movement on his opponents.
Now, sometimes if your axe guy is really good, you will get pain compliance set mm-hmm. for people like, oh God, that hurt, I'm going to go down now.
That doesn't happen a lot at the high end. It happens a lot at the mid and lower ends.
And it's a lot of fun to watch. Yeah, a lot of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. For the most part, that doesn't happen at the higher end because our armor is better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And people just don't care.
Yeah, true.
Right. Mm-hmm. I know for the most part that if you hit me and it hurts, I'm not going to let you do it again. And I'm most likely not injured.
Yeah,
right.
One of the harder people in the sport to just straight up sit.
And that's specifically because I wear full plate.
Yeah, he wears.
I wear a very tanky kit.
We're gonna have to get some helmets.
We will do a episode all on the different kinds of equipment and stuff. We will do.
Stay tuned.
Right now, this episode of KTL is just kind of an overview of our sport. This show is aimed not at people who are veterans of the sport.
True.
I'm sure you guys will enjoy the show too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's aimed at folks that are fans of the sport or want to learn more about what we do.
Exactly.
Right. Cool. So, and in that vein, again, just so I don't know if we've covered this before, but we fight to the ground, mm-hmm. and the team with the last guy standing wins.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Basically, our sport is hockey. All right?
Okay.
But we start by clearing the benches.
Yeah. Okay.
And we dispense with a goal and the puck.
We just fight. It's, you know, literally just the squat fight.
Yeah.
It's a fight. It's a fighting sport.
Yeah. We just, it's hockey without any other rules.
And so,
yes. Yep.
So, and cross-checks are legal.
Cross-checks are legal, yeah.
And highly desired.
Yeah.
So, all right. So let's talk about the position. We talked about positions, the rail, the wing, and the center.
Mm-hmm.
What's the rail's job?
The rail's job is to, like, stay up, be an anchor.
He initiates the fight, right?
Oh, okay. So you can tell that I've never...
The child just never, I'm like, right? I think I don't know.
I'm like, oh, rail, no thanks, man. I'm going to be over here.
So, your rail guys tend to be your bigger dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And
stalwart.
I don't say better grapplers, because your better grapplers tend to end up in the two.
Yeah, I'll say they're your most secure grapplers.
Like, yeah, they don't have to worry about going down.
Exactly. They're not going to just go down.
Yeah. And they initiate the fight. That's mm-hmm. the important thing is the rails have to initiate the fight, and they have to protect that rail. The rail is the only terrain we have in our sport.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Otherwise, it's just a big open list. And it's dangerous to go out in the list. That's how you fall down. Right, Charles?
I love it. I love being in the middle of the list.
Right now, I wish we could cut to a screen to a shot of you and Santos.
About 2 feet.
As you eat shit in the middle of the in the middle of the list,
we're gonna break our nose and put a picture of it like right
here,
right somewhere. It'll be great.
All right. Anyway, the rail guys, their job is to protect that rail, and they tend to work up and down the rail.
Absolutely.
All right. So your twos are going to see it's. Depending on who's in what slots, things change. We don't have positions. Positions are the wrong way to look at it. We have the positions and archetype.
Yeah, yeah.
And you need to, but when you combine those two, you actually get the actual position, the way that person is going to fall.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like if I'm playing rail, right, I play it very differently if, say, Charles is my two with his big axe, or if Brennan is my two. Yeah. Brennan doesn't strike.
Exactly.
Brennan's a big grappler. One of our better grapplers on our team.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do as a one is I'm going to try to hand him a grapple. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to give him a person in a bad situation so that Brennan can get a quick grappling takedown.
Exactly.
Whereas if Charles is in my pocket as a two, what I'm going to do is I'm going to stretch my opponent in ways that when Charles hits him, it hurts really bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. And hopefully not get hit by Charles.
He's going to get
it. It's
he hasn't learned. He hasn't learned in 2 years.
Seven.
Oh, we're getting old, Charlie. No, don't do this to me.
So, but yeah, so that's kind of the position. And year two changes what they do depending on what weapon they're carrying,
mm-hmm.
what kind of a fighter they are, right?
A lot of this sport, and I guess like any other sport, like who's in the position very much dictates what's going on.
Yeah.
Whereas like,
even now, what their armor is,
yeah,
what weapon they're carrying,
absolutely,
right.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, it very much dictates how that position is played. So it's not like football per se, or like soccer or basketball.
Where your quarterback's always going to throw the ball. The quarterback's always
Yeah.
And this one, it's like, oh, we've got a guy who's maybe like not the most mobile at three, but he can swing real hard. So we'll just let him play like a power three and just walk slow and swing.
Yep. So your one and two are going to work together on the rail. Yeah. And depending on what the two and what the one, how their armor set up and how their weapons are set up and how that particular individual plays is going to depend on what they end up doing. But teamwork is the most important part for those two.
1,000%.
Right. That's why it's the rail and the wing, because the wing, they have to work together. Mm-hmm. Right. The one and two work together.
The wing and the breasts. Like on shit.
Yeah. Speaking of which, you guys selling wings. Listen to me. Stop breaking the wing into two pieces and charging me for two wings.
Yo, we might have to do another podcast.
I'm just disappointed, but it should be insisting I'm tired.
I'm not. It's not even almost okay.
So, I hate to admit this, but I was probably 25 years old before I realized wings weren't mini chicken wings. They were wings broken in half.
You could have said that anywhere, but on this podcast,
I was a bad.
Well, that's a bad.
That's why I realized that.
It's not okay.
That's for a second.
You just saw the three.
The three's true with it.
You know, three is going to be.
Well, you know, better be to be a
Noble fighter. And the three's job is to kind of like.
You're mobile and also more experienced.
You're experienced.
So you need good field awareness and to be comfortable fighting in the open field at three.
Absolutely. A three is going to spread his help around to his teammates as needed.
Then our teammate Sean is one of the best.
Yeah.
Straight up, he is.
Yeah.
He just sprinkles his love
across
the league.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's always bouncing from target to target to target.
Mm-hmm.
He's never getting involved in a grapple.
Yeah.
Prolonged grapple. And he's deadly accurate with this, like, 5.5-6 foot axe that he can just reach out, smoke somebody, and then move on to the next guy.
Yeah. Sean has, like, definitely found his, like, archetype, his position. And that's the thing, too, is when someone falls into their position really well with their fighting archetype, it is absolutely beautiful to watch. Another one of our threes who fights similar to Sean, but different than me, I guess, the other three is Adam. Adam will spread his love around, but he does a lot more checks. He does a lot more supported grapples, and he uses a sword and a shield.
The man has the best foot pick.
Yeah.
In the game.
Yeah. He does very well.
I mean, so like if Sean comes up, you know an axe is coming.
Yeah.
Right. If Charles rolls up, axe is going to be the first strike.
And
if Adam rolls up, it's going to be a foot kick almost immediately.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
It's a free shot that he could take. And then, I can't tell you how many takedowns that we've gotten or that Adam and I have gotten where Adam walks up. Again, I know, I see him coming. He comes up, kicks a foot. I push the dude in the face.
Yep.
And then down
the shoulder. Yep.
And so and the guy has no clue what's there. So, and it's this teamwork interaction that separates the good teams from the middle teams.
Yeah, very true.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, don't get me wrong, individual fighter skill is important. Let me say this again.
Very.
Individual fighter skill is very important.
But it's like that in every sport, so it's not really, our sport is a special in that way.
Yeah. But teamwork is super important.
Absolutely.
Right? It is that force multiplier, right? If you don't have good teamwork, if you're not synergistic with your teammates, look at me, I use it. I use the SAT word.
Synergistic.
If you're not firing all cylinders with your teammates, you're going to have a bad day.
Very true.
Right. Case of one where our teammate, Austin, he's an absolute monster in the list.
Yeah.
Right? But if he doesn't have somebody playing a good teammate support role for him, you can look at his stats. They go down.
He gets subdued.
Right? Because he's so scary, people dedicate to him. Right? He is one of the scariest, most scariest axemen in this.
Yeah.
Right? But if somebody dedicates to him, then he's shut down. So you got to have that one being able to protect him so that he can do his job, right?
Yeah. You don't typically see, also to piggyback that, you don't typically see rails with axes, with two-handed axes. It's not something you typically see. I've seen it, and I don't remember how it went, actually.
Wow. You just going to call me out like that?
Did you?
For like a year and a half, 2 years.
Because
I got real bored fighting with one of that.
Yeah. All right, then. I guess I'll just...
No, we won national championships.
Yeah.
You shouldn't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
Please don't do that. That's stupid.
Actually, to be honest, let's say at Wingate's, most people should put down their two-handed weapons in the sport simply because of...
And yes, if you're wondering, we are talking to you.
I'm not. I might be talking to you. Maybe.
to you. Mm-hmm. You specifically put your axe down. You're not good with it.
Lord, I'm murdering.
You know, Creedican's going to murder me if he ever sees this podcast.
Right? Oh, I mean, that is the one exception.
So, for fighters that aren't new folks are not from our sport, Creedican is one of the most scary dudes with a twin.
I think he's probably the guy that you don't want to get hit with.
And it's like in our sport, the axe becomes effective when you have a grappling skill set to base it off of. It's not real effective without that skill set. That's why we're saying put down the axes, right?
Well, exactly. Exactly.
But again, axes are fun. Crowds love them.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing more in the sport I love than taking someone's axe from them and hitting them with it.
Yeah, I like hit. Yeah, swinging axes is just dope. And they're just kind of, there was a little bit of time where in the U.S.
That was the meta.
We were talking about, actually.
Just swinging axes.
Yeah, it was just swinging axes, yeah. The executioners really did that effect.
They built their name off of it.
Yeah. Right?
But if you looked at Carnage, they didn't.
Yeah, exactly. The executioners have evolved quite well, and I'm excited to see what they do in the future.
Yeah, the meta of sport is constantly evolving. It's one of the cool things about Buhurt is that as the sport, or as our fighters get better, the sport changes.
Exactly. Right?
As our armoring techniques get better, the sport changes. As our weapons techniques get better, the sport changes.
Yep.
Right? Used to, we were breaking axes
all the time. Yep.
Now with Brett's super axes, we don't win
really.
And that's Optimum Arms, spelled with an E.
Yeah. I
broke one axe last year.
I think I've broken one axe this year, and it was at Carnage. And like the rest of them have been, I got to start swinging harder, man.
Do you? Huh. Then I bent Sean's axe in that pro fight.
Oh, yeah.
God. Yeah, that was in the pro fight.
No, man, in my axe.
Yeah. I bent my axe in a pro fight.
Here,
and I bent his axe on that poor Englishman's head at Carnage.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if, what we're saying is our technology and our weapons and what we're making is going from what homemade one of the blacksmiths can do in his garage to more visualized modern equipment.
We're also seeing a lot more American weapon and armor smiths, which I am
nice.
Very, very happy about.
You got American Buhurt, you got Optimum Arms,
you've got
Shameless Plug, you've also got Artisan Arms.
You've got Red Snake.
Red Snake.
You got,
no, Red Snake's not U.S., he's Mexican.
Is he?
Yeah, Red Snake's Mexican. Yep. Red Snake trained under Benjamin. You know, Alabama and Mexican are both down in Mexico.
North American, but yeah. And then you've got Iron Crab.
Iron Crab is another one. And you've got one of the best armors in the nation. Kyle Harris.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So
Kyle Harris makes fantastic gear for our sport.
But you're not going to get on this list anytime soon.
Yeah.
It's like a 2-year waiting period.
Yeah, something like that. It was massive. So
a lot of our armor beforehand and weapons came from Eastern Europe
and
specifically Ukraine.
Truth be told, most of it still comes from there, probably about 80%. So now that's one of the barriers to entry sport. If you're looking to start, is the first thing I've got to tell you as a new fighter is I want you to go to Western Union and I want you to go to some Eastern European country you've never heard of, and you're going to send some dude named Alexei.
It's going to be Alexei.
They're like all of it.
You're all Alexis.
They're all Alexis. And after you send him roughly $2,000, sometime in the next 6 months, you may receive a set of armor.
Yeah. And this is...
it sounds like a scale.
Listen
to what you got to do to start the sport.
That's how I got my helmet. Like, I gave my money to a guy named Alexei, and I think he gave my money to another guy named Alexei. And then, I was just sitting at home, and my mom was like, you got a package in your room. I was like,
hey, what's your helmet?
It works.
So, but yeah, that's how you have to pay for stuff, because a lot of your credit card processors don't work in Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
They're on a different system. So Western Union is how you get money over there.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That is one of the... Now, I will say this, if you're looking to start in the sport, do not buy a single piece of gear or armor until you've talked to an experienced fighter.
He didn't do this, and he has like 8 kits.
Hold up. That's not why I have like 8 kits. I only have the one kit that I fought in. And I've changed out a piece every now and then over the past 7 years. I bought a bunch of them because at our first ever team event, all of you knuckleheads were like, I'm just going to use your old kit because I bought a new kit. And all 6 of you were like,
I'm going to fight in your old kit. And six people can't fight in the same kit.
It's just because they're not trying hard enough.
So I got every piece of used armor I could.
Oh,
for the old bit of that at the time. Picked out the best, and I will have that, and give you all the rest.
Yes, fair, fair, fair. Yeah.
So that's why I have like eight kits of armor.
Right.
Which, I mean, eight's being facetious, and I don't have that many, but Glennon has like 18. Almost as many as Santos.
He has two helmets that are the same helmet. They're the same helmet.
And Yemno's in the league.
Look.